continuing our studies in the book of Leviticus, and having done an introduction and looked at the reasons for studying the book, we looked at its background, we looked at its use in the New Testament, and then we began to look at the contents of the book itself. And so we've gone through a fairly sizable chunk of it, and we're getting towards the end now, and we've looked at the many offerings, indeed, in the chapter we've just read, Leviticus 23, it mentions some of them again. We've looked at the Day of Atonement, the significance of blood, laws relating to sexuality, the penalties for breaking the law, various moral and ceremonial laws. And we come now to consider a section in chapter 23 and 24 and 25 that relate to various festivals or feasts that God appointed for the people of Israel that they might learn certain truths. And we find that a number of these festivals are mentioned in the New Testament, and in the New Testament we are given a clearer understanding of what their significance is. And so as we come and look at them, we will be making reference to the New Testament and seeing what they're about. And this will then give us better understanding of why God instituted them in the first place. So they were established by God as teaching aids, and they are very different. They range from what we read in verse 3, the weekly Sabbath that was to be kept by the people of God, through to the year of Jubilee, which was to be held once every 50 years. And so you've got a broad spread in terms of time. Now, we're not going to even attempt to begin to look at all of these tonight. Next week we may well look at a large number of them. We'll see indeed if we can't finish chapter 23. But to begin, we're just going to look at one of them, and that is the one that is the most common in occurrence, and that is the Sabbath. And so we're only going to look tonight at verse 3. Now, sometimes when you do a study of the scriptures, you find you spend a long time looking at one or two verses. Sometimes you look at one or two chapters. Tonight is one of those occasions when we look at one verse. And the verse is this, Leviticus 23, verse 3. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work on it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. So, what is the Sabbath? Where did it begin? And why did God give it? And what does the New Testament have to say before we come to consider some of its practical relevance for us living today? So first of all, what's the origin of the Sabbath? Well, if you turn back to Genesis in chapter 2, we read there about the first mention of the Sabbath day. It's at the end of the creation week. God has created the heavens and the earth. And we read in Genesis, we'll read from verse 1, chapter 2, verse 1. Thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. So here's the origin of the Sabbath day. It is a reminder that God created the heavens and the earth in 6 days and rested on the seventh. And so therefore it's something that is worth remembering, because it reminds us that all this rubbish about evolution is not true. But what we find here is that while God rested on the seventh day, there is no command to man, no command to Adam or Eve, that they also had to rest on the seventh day. Now, you might say that's a trifling point, but we'll see that there is some significance in that when we turn over to Exodus and chapter 16. If because when we turn to Exodus 16, we find the first occasion when men are commanded to keep the Sabbath. And it is quite clear from what God said to them that they had no concept of the Sabbath as something to be kept by men prior to this occasion. Exodus chapter 16 and verse 23. God has sent them the manna from heaven to feed them in the wilderness. And they were commanded that they should collect all they needed for each day, and they weren't to keep any over for the next day. And those who were rebellious and did try and keep some for the next day found it went rotten. But on the sixth day, God said, you are to collect twice as much, and it won't go rotten on the next day. Verse 23, because God said to them, this is what the Lord has said, tomorrow is a Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake today, and boil what you will boil, and lay it up for yourselves all that remains to be kept until morning. So they laid it up until morning, as Moses commanded, and it did not stink, nor were there any worms in it, as had been the case previously. Now notice, God doesn't say, tomorrow is the Sabbath, and you all know what I'm talking about. Tomorrow is a Sabbath rest. It's something that they had to be instructed in, because they hadn't had any teaching about this before. Verse 25, then Moses said, eat that today, for today is a Sabbath rest to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. And so the rebellious ones go out into the field, and lo and behold, there isn't any. Verse 26, 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, there will be none. Now it happened that some of the people went out on the Sabbath day to gather, but they found none. So there's no mention of the Sabbath between Genesis chapter 2 and Exodus chapter 16. We have no account of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, or anyone else in ancient history prior to Exodus 16 keeping the Sabbath, being told to keep the Sabbath, or being rebuked because they haven't kept the Sabbath. First occasion where it's applied to men is with the Israelites in Exodus chapter 16. And that's because God gave his Sabbath to his people. That's what we read in verse 29. See, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore he gives you on the sixth day bread for 2 days. Let every man remain in his place. Let no man go out on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. So God gave it to them. He hadn't given it to them, to any other nation, to any other people. It wasn't given generally. God gave it to the Israelites and to no one else. And this is confirmed when we turn to the book of Nehemiah. And in Nehemiah chapter 9, we find we have exactly the same thing as we've just read there in Exodus. In Nehemiah 9. And verse 14, as part of a prayer to God, we'll read from verse 13, you came down also on Mount Sinai and spoke with them from heaven and gave them just ordinances and true laws, good statutes and commandments. You made known to them your holy Sabbath and commanded them precepts, statutes and laws by the hand of Moses your servant. Prior to this time, they hadn't known the Sabbath. Now God told them about it. And God, having told them about it, then enshrined it as part of the covenant. And so we read in Exodus in chapter 20 that the Sabbath day is now part of the covenant. Exodus chapter 20 and verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day, the one that had been instituted 4 chapters before. Remember that day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labour and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days God made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. So it's enshrined as part of the covenant. And it now becomes a moral law. A failure to keep the Sabbath day was immoral. It was ungodly indeed. We won't turn to it now, but in the book of Numbers, there was someone who was caught collecting sticks on the Sabbath day. And they brought her to Moses, and Moses inquired of God, and God said, "You shall stone this person to death, because they have broken my covenant." So the Sabbath was very important. It was at the heart of the covenant. And we'll see why in a moment. Because now we're going to move on, and we're going to consider the purpose of the Sabbath. Why did God give the Sabbath? What's its significance? So what is the significance? What is the purpose of the Sabbath? Well, the term Sabbath means a rest. It means a cessation from labour. As I mentioned, it was given by God as part of the covenant that he had made. Indeed, you could say it's the keystone of the covenant. Remember what the covenant is that God made. The covenant isn't the books of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers and Deuteronomy. The covenant is Exodus chapter 20. The covenant is the Ten Commandments. We learn this from Deuteronomy in chapter 4 and verse 13, where it is said by Moses, "So he," that is God, "declared to you his covenant, which he commanded you to perform. That is the Ten Commandments, and he wrote them on two tablets of stone." So the Ten Commandments are the covenant that God made with the people of Israel. And it is the keystone of the covenant. It's right at the heart of the Ten Commandments. Now, what does God say elsewhere concerning its significance? Turn over to Exodus 31. Exodus 31 and verse 13. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak also to the children of Israel, saying, Surely my Sabbaths you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. For whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among his people. Work shall be done for 6 days, but the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. Therefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed." It was the sign of the covenant. And that's why it was such a crime to break it. Because if you broke the sign, you were breaking the covenant. You were going against the whole spirit of the covenant. And therefore, God rebuked very severely those people who broke that core of the covenant, the Sabbath day. And that's why people were put to death for breaking it. Now, this is very important. The Sabbath is the sign of the covenant. God made a covenant with Noah. And when God made that covenant with Noah, he said, "I give you a sign of that covenant. I set my bow in the clouds," the rainbow. The rainbow is the sign of the covenant that God made with Noah, that never again would he flood the earth and destroy all life. So when it's bucketing down with rain and the water's rising, we see the rainbow, we might say to ourselves, "Well, we're going to be drowned," but God will not utterly destroy everyone in the world, because he's made this covenant. And there is the sign come down to Abraham. God made a covenant with Abraham. And God gave to Moses a sign of the covenant. And the sign of that covenant was circumcision. And it was a sign to Abraham of the covenant that God made with him, to be his God, to give him offspring, and to give him the land of Canaan. And so there was this continuous reminder to the people of Israel, the descendants of Abraham, of the covenant that God made, that every male amongst them was circumcised. It was a reminder of God's promises made to Abraham. And so here, the Sabbath is the sign of the covenant with Israel. Note that, it's a covenant with Israel. Not once do you find God reproving the surrounding nations for not keeping the Sabbath. You find God rebuking them for many other things, for their wickedness, for their immorality, for their injustices upon the poor and all manner of other things. But not once do you find God reproving any other nation for breaking the Sabbath. The purpose of the Sabbath was as a sign to the people of Israel of the covenant that he had made with them, and it was also as a day of rest for them. As I said, the word Sabbath means a rest, a cessation from work. Its purpose was that the people might be refreshed, which is why Jesus says in Mark chapter 2 and verse 27, when he is rebuked by the Pharisees, we'll read from verse 23, "Now it happened that he went through the cornfields on the Sabbath. And as they went, his disciples began to pluck the ears of corn. And the Pharisees said to him, 'Look, why do they do what is not lawful on the Sabbath?' But he said to them, 'Have you never read what David did when he was in need and hungry, and those who were with him? How he went into the house of God in the days of Abiathar the high priest, and ate the showbread, which is not lawful to eat except for the priests, and also gave some to those who were with him. And he said to them,'" and this is the key verse, "'the Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath.'" The Sabbath was given also to the Jews for their good and for their benefit and for their blessing. Because if you work 7 days a week, you will eventually collapse from physical, nervous, and emotional exhaustion. The reason why God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh was not because God found it difficult or hard, and so it took him 6 days, and after the 6 days he was completely exhausted. The common word today is God was completely knackered, and so therefore he needed to sit down and have a rest. And go to bed and recover on that day. That's utter rubbish. Of course that's not the reason why God did it that way. The reason God worked 6 days and rested on the seventh day was to provide us with a pattern of how we should work. And God has made us in such a way that we need to work 6 days and every seventh day to have a rest. And that's why for the Jews God made it a law. God wasn't doing it because the Sabbath was important. God was doing it because people were important. And people needed to rest once every 7 days. And so he made it a moral law and said, "You've got to do this. And if you don't do this, you're going to be put to death. Because you need this rest that much." But just a final note on this. There is no mention of the Sabbath being set apart as a day of worship. You hear a lot of people today saying the Sabbath is a day of worship. It wasn't, it was a day of rest. There's no mention about people coming together to worship God. We read about them resting and assembling together, but resting and assembling together to do no work. Doesn't mean that they didn't do other things of a non-work nature, but that wasn't the purpose and function of the day. So let's move now on to look at the New Testament Sabbath, because here we discover the significance of the Sabbath for the Christian. And what you find when you come into the New Testament is that every reference to the Sabbath is to the Jewish Sabbath. Now, we're not going to go through and look up every reference, but in the Gospels, we've just seen one example. It's clearly the Jewish Sabbath that is being referred to, because the Pharisees are criticizing Jesus. Why are you allowing your disciples to do things unlawful on the Sabbath? If they were doing it on a Sunday, the first day of the week, remember the Sabbath was a Saturday, the seventh day of the week. If they were doing this on a Sunday, the Pharisees would have had no objection at all. Sunday's a working day, as is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But it's because it was a Saturday, because it was a Sabbath. That's why the Pharisees objected. You go through the Acts of the Apostles, and you find that Paul went to a new town, and when he arrived in a new town or a new city, his practice was to go to the synagogue to preach the gospel. Now, he didn't go on a Sunday. He didn't go on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, because there'd be no one there. He went on the day when there would be people present, and that was the Sabbath. It was the Saturday, the day the Jews met together in the synagogue. And that's when Paul went, and every reference in Acts to the Sabbath is the same. And I would argue that exactly the same is true in all the New Testament letters. Every reference to the Sabbath day is a reference to a Saturday. There is no verse anywhere in the New Testament that says that the Sabbath isn't Saturday anymore, it's now Sunday. The Sabbath was a Saturday, is a Saturday. It always has been, and it always will be. The question then is, do Christians keep the Sabbath? And the answer is no. Christians do not keep the Sabbath, the reason being we are not under that covenant. The writer to the Hebrews said in Hebrews chapter 8, where he's explaining the passing away of the old covenant, the Mosaic covenant, he says at the end of chapter 8 and verse 13, having gone through a number of arguments, he says, in that, he says, a new covenant, he has made the first obsolete. Now, what is becoming obsolete and growing old is ready to vanish away. Now, he said that prior to AD 70 and the destruction of the temple, which signalled the end completely of the old covenant. The old covenant has now ended. It is past, it has ceased. We are no longer under that covenant. And so therefore, we are not bound by any of its rules and regulations. And so we are not bound by the commandment to remember the Sabbath day. Because that is not the sign of the covenant that we are now under with Jesus Christ. We are under a different, a new, a better covenant. So what is then the significance for the believer of the Sabbath under the new covenant? Well, we find that in Hebrews chapter 4. The writer is explaining the contrast between believing and unbelieving, and he's spoken to them about the great dangers of unbelief. He showed them the dangers of the unbelieving Israelites wandering in the wilderness because of unbelief, and they lived and they died in the wilderness because of unbelief. And God said, because of your unbelief, you will not enter into my rest. And so he then quotes various parts from the Old Testament. So in verse 3 of chapter 4, for we who have believed do enter that rest. For he said, as I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. Speaking about these wicked people that rebelled against God and who died in the wilderness. But for believers, there's something different, something better. Although the works were finished from the foundation of the world. For he has spoken in a certain place of the seventh day in this way. And God rested on the seventh day from all his works. And again in this place, they shall not enter my rest. Since therefore it remains that some must enter it, and those to whom it was first preached did not enter because of disobedience, again he designates a certain day, saying in David, today, after such a long time, as it has been said, today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. For if Joshua had given them rest, then he would not afterwards have spoken of another day. There remains therefore a rest for the people of God. For he who has entered his rest has himself also ceased from his works, as God did from his. Let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone should fall after the same example of disobedience. So what have we got here? The Sabbath was not merely a sign of the covenant that God made. It was also pointing forward to the rest that was available to the people of God in, I believe, two aspects. Aspect number one, it's quite obvious, that's eternity. That when believers die and they go to be with God, they rest from all their works in this life, they rest from sin, and they know peace forever, never to sin again. But also, I believe, what the writer is talking about here is that when a person comes to Christ, they know rest. They know rest from their works. Verse 10, for he who has entered his rest has himself also ceased from his works, as God did from his. Now, I think there is a suggestion there that when a person comes to Christ, they put away all their own works, all their own efforts to get right with God, and they are depending solely upon Christ. And when they trust in Christ, they know rest. Rest for their souls. That's what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 11 and verse 28. He says this, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. I think that's what the writer is talking about. Coming to Christ, a person knows rest for their souls, because they've rested from all their own efforts to get right with God, and they find peace and rest in Jesus Christ. And so the Sabbath is not irrelevant to us. It teaches us about the rest of the people of God, the rest that comes from believing in Jesus Christ, and the rest that comes through being with him forever, excuse me, in eternity. Now, does this then mean that we can ignore completely the Sabbath? Well, the answer to that, I think, is yes and no. Yes, we can ignore it completely because, well, what did you do yesterday? Yesterday was the Sabbath day. Did you rest on it? I suspect not. I suppose most of you were doing your normal things that you would do on a Saturday. It would be work, shopping, this, that and the other, cutting the grass. Does this mean that you should be stoned to death? No, because we're not under that covenant. We're free from that covenant. So from that point of view, we now have nothing more to do with the Sabbath day. And so therefore I cannot support the likes of the Lord's Day Observance Society, because firstly, they are seeking to make Sunday the Sabbath day, and it never was. Secondly, they are seeking to impose it upon an unbelieving society which is not the people of God. The Sabbath was for the people of God, the nation of Israel. It was not imposed upon the Egyptians. It was not imposed upon the Babylonians. It was not imposed upon the Assyrians. God never said to any of the kings, go off and put these heathen to death because they are breaking the fourth commandment. God never said that. It was only Jews who could be guilty of violating the Sabbath, and only Jews who could be put to death for breaking it. So we cannot support the Lord's Day Observance Society. This nation is not the people of God. They could only, if they were consistent to the scriptures, seek to impose it upon the church. But as I've shown, the church is not under that covenant. The church is under a new covenant. So from that point of view, we do away with the Sabbath. But do we learn anything from the Sabbath that is useful to us? Well, I've mentioned it already. Jesus said the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. It's for our benefit, for our good. What do we learn from this? I've mentioned this already as well. God rested on the seventh day, having worked six, as an example to us
and to provide us with a working week. And God is saying, through his activity in creating, and through the teaching on the Sabbath day, that you and I have been made in such a way we need to rest once a week. Now, it doesn't matter anymore which day we rest. But rest we must. And if we don't have one day's rest every week, we are going to end up nervous, physical and emotional wrecks. And that's the reason why so many people in our society have such problems. It's not because society has become so much more difficult and complicated and hard. It's because they're trying to work 7 days a week. Or they're trying to work a continental shift system where you work 10 days and then have 3 days off, and then 10 days on and 3 days off. God didn't make us to work like that. That's why the Russians had to abandon their decimal weeks. Weeks of 10 days. It wouldn't work. Because God made us as 7 day creatures, not 10 day or 13 day or any other day creatures. We're 7 day creatures. Work six and rest the seventh. Now the Jews, because the Jews were treated as children, the Jews were told this day. But as Christians, we have freedom. God treats us as adults. You choose which day upon which you wish to rest. The day on which I rest is a Saturday. Because for me, Sunday is a working day. I get absolutely shattered on a Sunday. You might not think that preaching is hard work, but it is exhausting. You never realise it until you do it. But you might find that it's much more convenient for you to rest on a Monday, or a Tuesday, or a Wednesday. Now, when I was explaining this to someone, they thought this was dreadful, and their counter to this was to say, okay, what day did the church meet on? This man thinks that it's Monday, this man thinks Tuesday, this man thinks Wednesday. I said, you've completely misunderstood. The day on which a person rests is not necessarily the same as the day on which the church meets. You read the New Testament record, and what you find is, for example, in Acts chapter 20, the church met in the evening, because people would have been working during the day. And they met in either early in the morning or late at night, because that was the only time they had to meet. We have great blessings and privileges in this country because of the Sabbatarianism of people in the past. Sunday is generally regarded as a day of rest. That's tremendous. We have a great opportunity, so let's make the most of it. And we meet on a Sunday. We do not have to meet on a Sunday. The early church obviously did, but nowhere does Scripture say it's got to be a Sunday. I would say if we were living in Israel, it would be probably more convenient for us to meet on a Saturday. If we were living in Saudi Arabia, it would be more convenient to meet on a Friday. God is realistic. And he doesn't say, okay, everybody else has their day off on a Wednesday, and that's in that particular culture. But you've got to be different to meet on a Sunday, because that would bring about needless persecution. Doesn't mean that Christians don't get persecuted, but don't get persecuted needlessly. So whatever culture we find ourselves in, we have a day of rest and we meet as a church on the day that is most convenient. Now, people look at Sunday as being special because it's the day of the week on which the Lord Jesus Christ rose from the dead. Well, yes, that's true, and it's wonderful that we are able to remember that on this day, but you can remember that on any day. Let's remember also the words of the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 14. Where he comments about people regarding days differently. And he says in Romans 14 and verse 5, one person esteems one day above another. Another esteems every day alike. Let each be fully convinced in his own mind. He who observes the day, observes it to the Lord. And he who does not observe the day, to the Lord he does not observe it. He who eats, eats to the Lord. And he who drinks, drinks to the Lord. He who eats, eats for the Lord, but he gives thanks, he gives God thanks, and he who does not eat, for the Lord he does not eat, and gives God thanks. We have freedom. If you want to make one day special, fine. Don't impose it on anybody else. And if you think all days are alike, then don't despise and ridicule people that say, well, I want to make Sunday special. Now, having mentioned that phrase, just briefly to move on and to make mention of the likes of the Keep Sunday Special campaign and whether or not shops should open on a Sunday. I believe that shops should not open on a Sunday because the law says that shops should not open on a Sunday. If the law changes, as it has in Scotland, then I would have no objection. But what I do object to is people being forced to work 7 days a week. And I object to unfair competition. Now, that's not a biblical argument. But I do object to unfair competition. And that's what all these big superstores are doing. They are practicing unfair competition because they have the resources and the staff to be able to let people have a day off on another day, whereas the greengrocers or the ironmongers across the road, which is just one man and his wife or his son, they are being forced, out of economic necessity, to work 7 days a week in order to compete. And it's unjust and it's unfair. And so for that reason, I'm all in favour of the Keep Sunday Special campaign, as long as that's what the law says. And I've written to several MPs and I've said, what I would like to see is that if Sunday is deregulated, that all shops are forced by law to have at least one day closed. Doesn't matter which day it is, as long as there is one day closed. So if a shop wants to open on a Sunday, it can, but then it's got to be closed another day of the week. That way its workers are not forced to work 7 days a week, as otherwise they would be. Because that, I think, would violate the biblical principle that each person should have one day's rest per week. But let's remember also the significance of the Sabbath, which reminds us of the rest that believers have from sin and their works, and also from the sinfulness of this world and death. And it's something that which will remind us of the goodness of God towards us, and remind us of what is yet to come, and the joys and the happiness and the rest that we shall have with him in eternity. For those of us that feel exhausted much of the time, what a glorious thing that will be. So let us give thanks to our God that he cares for us and shows his love for us, even in little things like this, by showing us that we need to rest and that we have this wonderful rest up in store for us. So there we'll finish and ask if anybody has any comments or any questions.